Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
From WNYC in New York, this is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. In addition to hosting this show, I've also produced another show here at WNYC for many years. And no, it would not be polite of you to ask how many. I'll just say that the show is called New Sounds, and I was basically a kid when I started it. Anyway, New Sounds was meant to be a program about music that fell into the cracks, you know? Not rock, not classical, not jazz, not folk, but something in between. I was interested in things like Brian Eno's ambient music. Terry Riley's Eastern-influenced keyboard improvisations. Will Ackerman and the Windham Hill Guitarists. To my surprise and horror, I found that if you played those things on the radio, late at night, in the 1980s, people would say you were playing New Age music. Now, I didn't even know what New Age music meant. I didn't think it meant any of those people, the Enos and Rileys and Ackermans of the world. Now, that term is rising from its patchouli-scented grave, and in a few moments, we will try to figure out what New Age music actually means. We're also going to talk about actor Ethan Hawke's ambitious mixtape of John, Paul, George, and Ringo songs from after the breakup of the Beatles. It's part of the movie Boyhood, but it began as a real-life mixtape from Ethan Hawke to his own daughter. And we'll meet the L.A. duo called In the Valley Below. Their song Peaches is one of the most irresistible things I've heard this year, and they will play it for us later. But they're going to start us off with a live performance of a song called Dove Season. Here's In the Valley Below, live on Soundcheck. We'll be right back. In the Valley Below is the name of the band, out of L.A., performing here in our New York studio on Soundcheck. That song's called Dove Season, and there is lots more where that came from. In a little while, we'll get a chance to talk to the members of the band and hear a couple of great, catchy songs in live performances here in the Soundcheck studio. But first...
I am too smart. S-M-R-T. I mean S-M-A-R-R-T.
Damn it, you have to be smarter than that.
Pretty smart, huh?
Pretty smart. By the way, my name
is Smarty Pants. Today, we continue our occasional series on how to be smarter. We've been asking listeners and guests what their musical blind spots are, and we got a doozy of a question last week from Christopher Barnes, the lead singer from the Massachusetts-based band Gem Club. Take a listen.
I want to know more about New Age music.
Why?
I want to know more about...
Why?
Okay, because I'm totally... Someone was sending me all of these articles about Enya and her recording techniques, right?
Right.
And I think as an artist, part of the production is totally fascinating and the talent is totally fascinating. But then you think about it like, well, it's New Age. And that's what I heard when I was growing up. And I'm like, is New Age a legitimate... I mean, I know it's a legitimate genre, but like... Enya is the first thing that I think of when I think of New Age. So if someone that is out there that has like really cool New Age records, which I'm sure they totally exist, I just email us.
All right, Christopher. Now, if you're listening, we can do one better than emailing you some record titles, because joining me here in the studio is Mike Rubin, a regular contributor to the New York Times, who has covered the evolution of New Age music and some of its contemporary forms. Mike, welcome to Soundcheck.
Thank you.
You heard Christopher from Gem Club saying, you know, is it a legit? I know it's a legitimate genre, but he seems sort of unsure.
The origin of it actually was because it was a grab bag term. Late 70s, early 80s, it was instrumental records that didn't really correspond to jazz, country music, or rock and roll.
So it was a kind of a catch-all term.
Yeah, and at the time, it you could find, you know, if you went to a store, you could find everything from some sort of harp record to Steve Reich, all thrown in there in the New Age band.
And Christopher mentions Enya, the Irish singer, and she never intended to make New Age music, but if you looked in the New Age music bins, this is what you'd find.
Let me say
Enya had a huge hit with Orinoco Flow, but that was 1988, Mike. By that point, New Age has been around for a while, right?
Yeah.
So it kind of grows out of what? The electronic music movement?
It's a real confluence of things. The musicians themselves were coming out of electronic music. A lot of them were influenced by progressive rock, by the German Kosmische music.
So groups like Popol Vuh and Tangerine Dream,
exactly.
Klaus Schulze.
But also, at the same time, there was very much a post-hippie awakening and consciousness that was also brought in by some of the musicians.
Mm-hmm.
And at the time, in the early 80s, there were maybe 3,000 New Age bookstores throughout the country. And so that became a way to distribute these records. There's a box set that came out late last year called I Am the Center, which chronicles the history of New Age music and really defines it as being a self-released music.
The original indie music, in a sense.
The original indie music, before punk rock, in fact.
So let me ask you, you mentioned early 80s. Yes, there were all these New Age bookstores. It was great to have the New Age label affixed to your little cassette because it could get in the bookstores and maybe be sold. Why are we still talking about it in 2014? Why did you earlier this year write this big article in the New York Times about it? Why is New Age suddenly back in the air and in our conversations again?
I think there's a lot of younger musicians that are influenced by analog synthesizer sounds, and they have gravitated to explore some of the early pioneers of the music.
All right, so if we want to be smarter now about New Age music, give us some names. I mean, let's start with that box set that you mentioned.
You know, a track that's on there that it's quite an interesting story behind it. There's a track by Laraji, who is locally based here in New York.
Mm-hmm.
He was raised in Philadelphia, a trained musician. At a certain point in the 70s, he had while meditating, he had a deep religious hearing experience where he heard this layers of brass instruments and a gorgeous melodic symphony in his head, and he swapped his guitar for a zither at a Queens pawn shop and began to play in Washington Square Park. And at one point, I think it was 1979, he was playing, his legs were crossed, he was meditating and playing, and when he opened his eyes in his hat, his guitar case, there was a card from Brian Eno inviting him to come and meet him, and they ended up recording Day of Radiance, one of the early ambient Eno records.
But Laraji has had, a long career in New Age music. That one kind of pinnacle with Brian Eno is a terrific record, but you wanted to hear something from Unicorns in Paradise. This is a 1981 record by him.
Yes.
And the title here, Unicorns in Paradise, we're getting into like some serious New Age imagery, aren't we?
Yeah.
Laraji with Unicorns in Paradise from 1981. So this is after he did his best-known record, the one with Brian Eno. We're speaking with Mike Rubin, who wrote The New Age, The Next Generation for the New York Times earlier this year. And as part of our occasional series, How to Be Smarter, we're answering a question from Christopher Barnes from the Massachusetts band Gem Club, who wanted to know how he could be smarter about New Age music. A style of music, and it was more than music, Mike. I mean, we alluded to the imagery, the unicorns and the paradise. One of the things that, was sort of could be enticing to some and off-putting to others was the idea of this cosmic consciousness, the healing music thing. Music, not right. as music, but as something that, like an oral bubble bath or something.
Right. It definitely, I think, it came with an entire, a lot of baggage. One of the things that happened is that these younger musicians have sort of looked at the stuff without the blinders, as it were.
Well, in your article for The Times, you write about this compilation, and the guy who put it together is like 37 or 38. So at the heyday of the New Age music movement, this guy would have been a kid.
Yeah.
It's called I Am the Center, Private Issue New Age Music in America, 1950 to 1990. And let's hear something from this track. Who is J.D. or Daniel Emmanuel?
He's, I think, a Texas-based early synthesizer adapter.
It has that kind of vaguely exotic Eastern flavor to it,
yeah.
which a lot of this music has. And it's called Arabian Fantasy. Do you think that this guy just like set up his synthesizer and plugged it into a cassette deck and sort of improvised it straight to tape?
Yeah, I mean, it's quite possible that was the case. I don't know enough about his particular method. I ended up speaking to him for my story, but
this was a common way of making
sure.
this sort of thing.
Yeah, and there was a lot of some of it was intended to be a meditational accompaniment and. Some of it was intended to be, the search for peace and contentment.
And at some point, these New Age musicians are therefore trying to serve two masters. They're trying to make music, but they're also trying to do something with it, you know. And you could say the same thing about protest singers in
sure.
the 60s and stuff. It's always difficult when the music has an ulterior purpose for it to be great music. So
I might argue with that. I mean, I think that a lot that I'm a certainly a fan of rock and roll and electronic mm-hmm. dance music, and that has the purpose of making someone, move their body in a certain way. This music is, some of it is directed to for people to sort of clear their mind.
Mm-hmm.
And Douglas McGowan actually said something really interesting to
He's
me.
He's, again, the guy who put this compilation together.
Yeah, and he said that getting away from the noise of society is such a central idea, and that space is silence and nothingness and emptiness, he said to me. Once you wrap your head around nothingness as being a virtue, it becomes so much easier to appreciate the music on its own terms.
Mm-hmm. That sounds like something John Cage might have said.
Absolutely.
So we're speaking with Mike Rubin, who's written this article called For New Age, The Next Generation. He wrote it earlier this year for the New York Times, part of our series How to Be Smarter, and we're talking about the New Age music movement, which had its kind of height in the late 70s, early 80s. And one of the sort of, well, there were a number of like big names associated with it. You had people like Vangelis who predate New Age music but sort of got sucked into it. Then you had people like Stephen Halpern, Yanni came later. Tell us about Yassos, because he was another of the big names in the field.
Yeah, Yassos was a San Diego-based, I think, again, synthesizer and flute composer and or improviser, as it were. He comes along right in sort of the very beginning. I think his 1975 album, Interdimensional Music, is ends up being a sort of keystone of what becomes New Age music.
And a keystone both in the sound and in the way people reacted to it,
yeah.
because a lot of people accused this music of being just wallpaper, oral wallpaper, in the same way that many people say current dance music, electronic dance music, is just a different kind of sonic wallpaper. Here is a piece by Yassos called Formentera Sunset Clouds. Thank you. Formentera Sunset Clouds by the artist known as Iasos, I-A-S-O-S, who, Mike, was there at the birth, so to speak, of the New Age movement.
Yeah.
And is still going strong?
Still going strong. In fact, he was he's a big influence on some of the younger musicians that I spoke to for the piece.
All right. Now, that to me was the big surprise. Having lived through the 80s and my other show here, New Sounds, was also kind of painted with the New Age brush in the 80s because I was really interested in people like Brian Eno and Laraji and even someone like Terry Riley with his very Eastern-oriented
right.
Keyboard improvisations. Somehow all of that stuff, you know, got subsumed into the New Age thing, whether anybody wanted it or not. So the idea that there are now artists out there who are embracing the term is a curious one to me. Tell us a little bit about, for example, Mark McGuire.
Well, Mark McGuire is someone who actually, I guess, would embrace the term. I mean, he comes from the punk uh-huh. rock scenes in Cleveland. He was been in a very influential band called Emeralds. It was an analog synthesizer trio, and they released scores of homemade cassettes and CDRs, and eventually a number of actually of sort of more traditionally distributed mm-hmm. albums. But all along, they were one of the first of these sort of underground electronic bands to openly acknowledge the influence of people like Iasos and Laraji and these early synthesizer uses of the synthesizer.
In Search of the Miraculous is from Mark McGuire and an album called Along the Way. Guitarist Mark McGuire from his album Along the Way and a piece called In Search of the Miraculous. There are lots of moments, Mike Rubin, on this record that I'm not sure Iasos or Laraji or any of those guys would point to and say, oh yeah, that's New Age music. But for Mark McGuire, that is an important part of his musical DNA.
Yeah, and again, it's really, a lot of these younger artists are really sort of looking at this and not breaking things down into specific genre titles. But Mark McGuire, there's a video on YouTube of him jamming with Iasos at the Body Actualize Center, this yoga studio that's out in Bushwick, where I actually saw him perform. But there's a clip of the two of them jamming, Mark on guitar and Iasos on a treated flute. And, you know, he's open to it.
Listeners, what's your history with New Age music? What do you think? Is it time come round again? Were you around for the first flowering of New Age music in the 80s? You can leave us a comment at soundcheck.org or a voicemail at 866-939-1612. Mike Rubin's article for the New York Times earlier this year is called For New Age, The Next Generation. Mark McGuire is certainly a part of that next generation, but there are others who might not be so embracing of the term, but who you think, you know, owe a debt to this movement.
Well, I don't know if it's so much owe a debt, but it's easy to group them under, again, what people think of as being that. I think the artist Juliana Barwick is certainly, she would resist being, you know, described as New Age. Mm-hmm. But I, you know, pejoratively, people have called her the Indienya. It's sort of the gauzy textures and
multiple layers of voice.
Yeah. A sort of free floating, almost amniotic kind of state. Most of what really defines it and stuff, but along with the sort of textures and is the fact that there's really not a beat that's driving.
Thank you. So Juliana Barwick, New York-based vocalist, does a lot of live looping and stuff. So it's happening all over again, that the term New Age is beginning to just kind of magnetically pull in all these disparate forms of music that we don't know what else to call.
Yeah, I mean, I for lack of a better word, I mean, I just wrote about recently the artist Craig Leon for The Times, and there's a reissue of the two early 80s synthesizer records he made, Nelmos and Visiting. And those were, you know, he while he was made as fame as the producer of the first Ramones and Suicide albums, he those records were are instrumental synthesizer recordings inspired by the art of the Dogon people of Mali, who were inspired by their belief in an extraterrestrial contact. And those were grouped under New Age records. And so, you know, for lack of a better term, that was what they're what they were called.
I remember those Craig Leon records. They were actually pretty damn good, especially Visiting. So subsequently, they were like retroactively pulled in. You're a New Age too.
Yeah, another. There's other artists. I mean, there's a number of, you know, Grey Ghost is an artist, I think, that openly probably refers to themselves or as New Age. There's a very interesting band that's playing out of Chicago called Bitchin' Bajas, which is a side project of a more of a sort of psychedelic rock band called Cave. But they again work from the German Kosmische sort of playbook, and they've got a and they have a new album that's actually coming out at the end of August. That's half of the album. I think believe it's a double album, and half the album is very Kosmische and sort of driving, and half of it is very sort of blissful, contemplative synthesizer soundscapes.
There's a whole new generation, as Mike Rubin recounts in his article for The Times. The article is called For New Age, The Next Generation. And Mike, thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you.
Up next, The Black Album is the name of a mixtape of solo material by the Beatles that's been making the rounds online, in part because it's featured in a new movie. Now, I recently listened to this three-disc monster and discussed it with John Hockenberry, host of the show The Takeaway. We'll hear that next. And then later, more live in-studio music from In the Valley Below. This is Soundcheck. This is Soundcheck. I'm your host, John Schaefer. That means I'm normally the guy who asks the questions. But recently, I was a guest on WNYC's The Takeaway to talk about one of the most interesting ideas for a mixtape ever. And I want to share that conversation with you here on Soundcheck. I spoke with The Takeaway's host, John Hockenberry, about The Black Album, an unofficial compilation of solo material by the Beatles. It was curated by the actor Ethan Hawke, and this post-Beatles Beatles mixtape also plays a role in the new film Boyhood. Again, this conversation first aired on The Takeaway from WNYC. Here's how host John Hockenberry kicked things off.
We don't review record releases on this show very often, but we're going to make an exception today.
Open it up. I call that the Beatles Black Album. Best of John, Paul, George, and Ringo solo post-breakup.
Thanks. Yeah, basically I put the band back together for you. You know, when you ever listen to too much of the solo stuff, it kind of becomes a drag, you know?
But you put them next to each other, and they start to elevate each other. It's the Beatles.
If you saw the amazing movie Boyhood, you know this moment, where Ethan Hawke gives his son in the movie a music mix he calls the Black Album. A dad trying to impart wisdom to his child, plays old school FM DJ in three CDs worth of music.
Top of volume two, first four tracks. You got Band on the Run, Into My Sweet Lord, Into Jealous Guy, Into Photograph. But come on. It's like the perfect segue. You got Paul who takes you to the party. George who talks to you about God. John who says, no, it's about love and pain. And then Ringo who just says, hey, can we enjoy what we have while we have it?
Well, the rain exploded with a mighty crash as we fell into the sun. Really want to see you, Lord, but it takes so long, my Lord.
Hallelujah.
My sweet Lord, I didn't mean to hurt you. I'm sorry that I made you cry.
Lesson here? That each individual Beatles' work, carefully and meticulously collected and organized, magically reveals the creative power of collaboration and the miraculous synergy of the original Fab Four. Actor Ethan Hawke actually did this in real life for his daughter, and director Richard Linklater made it part of the movie Boyhood, which got good reviews on this show some weeks back. Today we review the Black Album with our own old-school FM DJ John Schaefer, host of Soundcheck and New Sounds at our partner station WNYC.
The idea is that the Beatles were more than the sum of their parts, and that apart, they are somewhat less than themselves. And that by putting them together this way, by juxtaposing the best of their individual songs, they buttress each other and they complement each other, even as they sometimes contrast with each other. There's a good example in the second of the three CDs where you hear John Lennon, a kind of a deep cut from him,
right,
called Crippled Inside, which
right,
has a very kind of gut bucket American sound to it. That is adjacent to Ringo Starr's You're 16, You're Beautiful, and You're Mine, a song that I've always thought was in questionable taste. But here, next to this kind of John Lennon song, the kind of American roots feel of the Ringo song comes out in a way that I had never experienced
before. So first the deep cut, and then the much more familiar Ringo tune. These pairings are great. What's another one?
Well, you know, there are a number of there's a moment where he brings Paul McCartney's Pipes of Peace and John Lennon's Imagine together, you know, two songs about love and peace. Mull of Kintyre by Paul McCartney is right next to John Lennon's O Yoko. Both songs have a kind of folk song quality to them. Again, something that in the John Lennon case isn't really obvious until you put it next to Mull of Kintyre, which sounds like an old Scottish folk song or something like that.
Part of this is kind of an old radio thing in the sense that DJs love to talk
exactly
about their segues. And
yes,
I can see it right on your face.
This is exactly what this – this is not just a mixtape.
Right.
This is an old school, free form, late night FM college DJ.
There you go.
Putting together the most awesome set of songs that he or she can imagine. I have a few quibbles. You know, Ethan Hawke says to his son's character in the film that this is the best of the four of them post-Beatles. Where is 1985 by Paul McCartney?
Mm-hmm.
Where is Whatever Gets You Through the Night by John Lennon?
Gotcha.
Where's Living in the Material World by George? There are a couple of things I really wish were in here. But by the end, the beauty of his concept becomes apparent at the final CD, the end of the third of the three CDs, in this really extraordinary moment where you have Paul McCartney's Here Today, his song mm-hmm. about his love and relationship for John after he'd been killed, juxtaposed with George Harrison's All Things Must Pass.
And if I say I really loved you and was glad you came along, then you were here today. Ooh, for you were in my song. All things
Things Must Pass following Here Today from Paul McCartney, that would be a real great, weepy place to leave us. But he doesn't leave us there. There's a little musical coda, which is Paul McCartney in an MTV Unplugged show doing a version of And I Love Her, as if to say, after everything, after the bitterness, after the strife, after all of that, something endures, and it's the music, and it's a great old Beatles classic that endures. It's not the Beatles playing it, and it's a slightly different tempo and a slightly different rhythm, but it is that great old Beatles tune, and it's as if Ethan Hawke is saying, something of the Beatles survives the four of them.
A love like ours.
The hope is that in the larger context of what he's talking about, of love and regret and guilt and remorse and all of that, that something endures from that process as well.
It's a beautiful acoustic song, and it's a great coda. And as Ethan Hawke says to his son, you are the music of whatever happened in our relationship, referring to his own marriage.
Mm-hmm. And let's also remember, he calls this the Black Album. It's the counterpart to the White Album, which was the sound of a band falling apart. And the Black Album, in a sense, is the sound of one man putting that band back together in his imagination and now in our ears.
If we yearned for the Beatles to get back together, does the Black Album deliver that?
Oh, that's a big question. I would say no, because I think at the end of the day, that is in fact not the intent of the Black Album. The intent is exactly what the fictional character is saying in the Linkletter film, because this was something that Ethan Hawke did in real life for his daughter. So this is very much about family and about the passing of time and about the passing of your love of music, of your family, or whatever, onto your children and to the rest of your family. And that, on that level, it works.
John Schaefer, thanks so much.
John, thank you.
What I feel.
Like to check out the Black Album for yourself and read Ethan Hawke's essay about it, go to soundcheck.org. Up next, more live music in our studio from the band In the Valley Below. Plus, we'll talk with the band about their debut album, The Belt, next on Soundcheck. This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. The band called In the Valley Below comes from L.A., and yes, they do have that kind of sunny Southern California vibe going on, but there's also something darker, a hint of the L.A. of Philip K. Dick or David Lynch. The band's debut album comes out on August 26th, but the video for their single Peaches is already nearing the 500,000 mark in views, and at least a couple of those views are mine. What can I say? It's a really catchy tune, and the band is going to play it for us live today here in the Soundcheck studio. This is In the Valley Below, playing their song called Peaches. ¶¶
That's just fine, yeah. You can say it's free, baby, that's alright. Working on a feeling, breaking down the ceiling, digging up a deep end. Freezing on the beaches, reaching for the sweetest, sweetest beaches.
Is the band In the Valley Below, live on Soundcheck with their song called Peaches, which will appear on their debut full-length album, The Belt, when that comes out shortly. The members of the band include Angela Gale singing, Jeffrey Jacobs singing and playing guitar, Jeremy Grant behind the keyboards doing some backing vocals, and Joshua Clare behind the drum kit. Angela, Jeffrey, to you guys. Welcome to Soundcheck.
Thank you. Thanks for having us.
And on behalf of parents everywhere, in a day and age where it's so hard, you know, your kids listen to these songs on the radio and they're full of sex and violence and sex. And here you've written this lovely song about the simple joys of harvesting fruit.
You're welcome.
That is what it's about, isn't it?
Yeah.
Now, there is this play, though, of light and dark in pretty much everything you guys do, it seems. Where does that come from?
I think maybe deep down it comes from music that we like to listen to, which is always on the darker side. But we ourselves as people are kind of hopeful and optimistic, or dreamers, I guess. So what
kind of music are you talking about when you say the music that's got a darker side to it?
Well, like Pink Floyd. I like Patty Griffin a lot as a songwriter. Mm-hmm.
ABBA is a good dark band.
Well, now, even the name of the band, In the Valley Below, I mean, that almost sounds like it comes from some old murder ballad or something. Where did you guys get that name from?
The spark came from the Bob Dylan song, One More Cup of Coffee. And then we just liked the idea of creating a place in our minds and in people's minds where nobody really knows what's going on in the valley below, which we like.
Yeah, so a lot of the songs do have very ambiguous lyrics, and you can read a lot of things into them or nothing into them. Speaking of drinks, it's not coffee, but you guys brew beer, right?
That is true.
Yes.
How long have you been doing that?
It's been a few years now. We've been experimenting with various ingredients, and we really just make it so we can drink it. But yeah, we like very dark beers.
Well, now I was going to ask, you know, does the play of light and dark come through in the beer making as well? So you do like stouts and porters and that sort of thing?
Yeah, stouts, porters, brown ales, Dunkelweizens. Those are sort of our favorites.
Is brewing and then drinking the beer part of the creative process for you guys?
Sure. I mean, brewing in itself is a creative process because you're putting these ingredients together and sort of wondering how they're going to react to each other. And it's similar to making music because you're trying out different sound elements when you're creating a song, and we're trying different hops and yeast and stuff like that.
So. Right. And do you stick to the basic four ingredients, the barley, malt, the yeast, the hops, and water?
We usually, and then we add some sort of random spice in there just to make it interesting.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, that's fair.
Yeah.
The band is In the Valley Below. They are playing on Thursday night here in New York at the Westway, and playing for us here in the Soundcheck studio today. You want to do Neverminders for us?
Yeah.
I think we can manage.
All right. The album is called The Belt. It comes out the final Tuesday of the month, August 26th. We're getting a bit of a preview in these live performances here on Soundcheck.
Doorways to the north, handshakes to the south, pumping iron hearts, blood in your mouth, one massive ray, hats waving the tray. The deeper you go, the more heads you blow.
Never mind, it's coming.
Once again, the band is in the valley below here in our New York studio playing live for us on Soundcheck and a song called Neverminders. Once again, Angela Gale singing, Jeffrey Jacobs singing and playing guitar, and Jeremy Grant playing keyboards, Joshua Clare on drums, rounding out the touring version of the band. They are playing on Thursday night here in New York at the Westway. They're playing for us on Soundcheck today. There's a line in that song, Jeffrey, about red, white, and brown, but the look that the two of you favor is definitely black and white. I mean, in the videos, the album cover, even here in the studio, and we're shooting video today, so folks will be able to see what I mean. That almost seems like another callback to, like, Appalachian music or folk songs or old-timey music.
Well, really, I started wearing these suspenders because we picked up a pair of them in Vermont at some thrift store, and I found that they held my pants up well. And then it kind of just grew from there. And Angela, well, I'll let her tell her side of the story.
Well, part of it is it's nice to sort of narrow down, you know, what you want to wear, and so you're just not going crazy about how you want to look all the time. And also there's something ceremonial about us all wearing the same outfits, and when we go on stage, it helps us to get in our zone.
Yeah. All right, the band is In the Valley Below. Their album, The Belt, comes out on August 26th. They've been playing for us here in the Soundcheck studio today, and guys, thank you so much for coming in and performing for us.
Thank you for having us.
Aspen eyes, flicker fire. I wish I found you sooner. I could have loved you longer.
Tomorrow on the show, the annual dance music festival known as Electric Zoo returns to New York 1 year after two festival-goers died from drug overdoses. We'll hear about the steps the festival is taking to educate attendees about the use of Molly and other drugs. Plus, British rock and soul artist Liam Bailey just released his debut this week. He joins us to play songs from it live in our studio. Our theme song is called Eagle Rock. Find out more about its composer, Marco Benevento, on our website and explore our archive of live performances and in-studio videos. Today's look at the Black Album mixtape came courtesy of our friends at The Takeaway. That does it for the show today. I'm John Schaefer. This is Soundcheck.